Begin the current daf Masechet Shabbos, daf Kuf Hei. We begin two lines up from the top of the Amud, but the Gemara continues discussing our Mishnah. And we're speaking about the Malacha of Kaisiv, regarding the Malacha of writing on Shabbos. And although we said that generally to be Chayiv for the Malacha of Ksiv, you have to have written two letters. However, the Gemara quotes from the Mishnah that Kosev Ois Achas Nutrikin, that if you wrote one letter as an abbreviation, then you're Bishu Ben Maseir Mechayiv Vacham Paitin. There we have Machlaikis. Bishu Ben Maseir says that you're liable. And the Chum say Yepater, and this would be an example, for example, if you write Hashem's name. So some people write a hey with a little apostrophe. That would be an abbreviation. Although you're not writing two letters, you're writing just one. However, the one letter could be significant, at least according to the opinion of Shubim Maseira, because it stands for something. And it's like you wrote a whole word, and that's why he holds Yechayah. But Rabban said, no, that since you only wrote one letter, you're going to be Pater. So the Gemara elaborates on this concept of abbreviations. Amar B'yechanan Mishum Reisi Ben Zimra. How do you know that there is such an expression, such a concept of abbreviations from the Torah? How could this be a viable idea that, for example, according to Rabbi Ruben, say that you're going to be even liable for writing on Shabbos? Shnem, like it says in the Pasuk, Ki av ha-mon goyim nisaticham. Because a father of the multitude of nations have I made you. This is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Avram. Because he chose Avram, he's going to make him an av ha-mon goyim. So therefore, the Gemara brings a drasha of Netrikin, abbreviations, which many people that have drushas on the Torah have these things of abbreviations, what the word stands for. So the source is over here in this Gemara. The words Av HaMoin are darshan, are learnt out in the way that each letter stands for another word. Av Nisaticha L'Umes, I have made you a father to the nations, that's the Aleph. The Beis is Bochur Nisaticha B'Umes, I have made you a chosen one amongst the nations. That's the word Av. HaMoin is Chaviv Nesaticha B'Umis, the Hey, which is interchangeable with the Ches, I've made you a beloved amongst the nations. The Mem is Melech Nesaticha B'Umis, I've made you a king amongst the nations, as the Pasuk in Bereishis, Perich of Gimel says, Nasiya Lekimata, that you are a prince among the nations. The Vav is Vasik Nesaticha B'Umis, I've made you distinguished amongst the nations. And the Nun, the last letter from HaMoin, is Nemo Nesatich Lumis, I have made you trusted amongst the nations. So that is the Av HaMoin. What does it mean, the father of multitudes? Av HaMoin stands for, each letter stands for a different concept of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given Avram in regards to all the nations of the world. That was what Rabbi Yisrael ben Zimra told to Rabbi Yechanan when Rabbi Yechanan asked him, where do you know the source of abbreviations? But then the Gemara says, Rabbi Yechanan didayam, Rabbi Yechanan himself then offered a place where you find an abbreviation brought down as a concept in the Pasuk. That Anoichi, it says, the first word that HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke to Klal Yisrael at Har Sinai, when he says, Anoichi Hashem Lekecha, Anoichi, that, and again, you have to understand why does the Gemara say these things are Anotrikim, because Hashem could have said Ani. What's Anoichi? Again, all these words are there, written in a certain way, that are showing us that we want to utilize the word as a way of expounding it in this form of abbreviations. So what does the word Anoichi come to teach? Netrikin, it's an acronym for Ano Nafshi, that I myself, this HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaking, Kesivis Yehivis, I wrote this Torah and I gave it. That's the concept, what Hashem, the first word he's already telling you, he's saying, I want you to know that I wrote this and I'm giving this over to you, that it's not from anywhere else, and this is the fundamental principle of the whole Torah Misinai. Rabban Ami, the Rabban say a different interpretation. Amir Ne'ima, the Aleph and the Nun of Anoichi, is a pleasant statement. Kesiva Yehiva, it was written and given. That's the pleasant statement is obviously a reference to the Torah, that again, the first word Hashem said was giving this understanding of that the Torah is a pleasant statement that it was written and given. Eged Amida, those that give a different interpretation, they say, Anoichi l'mafreya, to interpret the acronym of Anoichi in reverse. That is first the Yud, then the Chaf, then the Nun, then the Aleph, which is Yehiva Kasiva, that it was given in writing, Nemonim Amareha, that its statements are reliable. Again, a different statement regarding the fundamental principles of the Torah. The Bei Reb Nosson Army, the academy of the yeshiva of Reb Nosson, they said, they interpreted a different pasuk, again, to show this concept of Netrikin, of acronyms written in the Torah, that when the Malach told to Bilam, when he was on his way and he got stuck and he was hitting his donkey, and then the Malach appeared to him saying, what are you doing hitting your donkey? So he said the following words to Bilam, Ki yored haderech lenegdi, because you hastened, you were quick to go on the road to oppose me. In other words, he was a shleich from HaKadosh Baruch Hu saying, what do you mean? Of course I'm here to stop you, because you're here to fight HaKadosh Baruch Hu and you're going to curse Klal Yisrael. So he alluded when he said the word yarat, that you hastened, that you were quick, he was trying to show him why it was that his donkey was trying to go away and he was hitting him. Why is he scraping his foot going against the wall? It says, yara, she was afraid, ra'asa, she saw, and natsa, she turned aside. That's the word yarat is yureya, ra'asa, and the test of natsa, that she turned away. That's why your donkey turned, don't hit your donkey. Your donkey was smart because me, the malach, was in the way, ready to kill you. A different source the Gemara brings, the Beri B'Shmol Tana, and the yeshiva of B'Shmol they taught, it says in the Pasuk Carmel, which is plump kernels. And this is a Pasuk written by the Mincha of the Omer, which is brought on the second day of Pesach. And it says, Gerish Carmel, that the kernels, the plump kernels are supposed to be brought as a carbon for the Omer. So the Natrikan here is a little bit different. It's not each letter individually, but the word is broken into two. Carmole, which literally means a full pillow, which is a reference to say that the Minchas HaOmer should be brought when the grain is still moist and it fills up the whole stalk that's holding it from the straw. That's the type of kernel that's supposed to be brought. That's what we say from the word karmel, which is karmel, a full pillow. It means like the grain is like looks like a full pillow. That's what type of grain is supposed to be brought for the Minchas HaOmer. Rav Acha ben Yaakov Amar, he brings a different source. He brings this a pasuk regarding what David said about Shimi ben Gera, that who kilalani kilola nemretzes, that Shimi ben Gera, David HaMelech says, cursed me an explicit curse. Now what's this word nemretzes? Interesting word. In the Trikin, it's an acronym regarding all the things that Shimi spoke slanderous about David HaMelech and how he cursed him, which is, nemretzes stands for these words, noyefu, that Shimi said about David that he's an adulterer, obviously referring to his story with Bathsheba. Mayavihu, the mem is that he was from Moyav, which is that his grandmother was Rus. Ritzeachu, he's a murderer regarding the different people that David killed, which seemed like that it wasn't proper that he murdered them not correctly. The tzadi is tzairuhu, he's an enemy. And to'evuhu, the tough is that he's an abomination. These are the curses that he said about David, and that's alluded to in the word that he cursed me, a curse of nimretzes, with those concepts, with those ideas that he cursed me. Rav Nachman Yitzchok Amar, he brings a different source. He brings the pasuk regarding the shvatim, that when they were caught with the becher, with the cup of Yosef, that Yosef had planted in there, and then they're going out, and they're caught, and they go, they said, mana daba, mana stadik, what can we say, and how can we justify ourselves? You're right, we're caught red-handed, we have the cup of Yosef in our bags. However, the word nitzadik is interpreted that, what were the terms, how could they justify themselves? With the ideas of the nun is nechayim menachnu, we are upright people, tzadikim menachnu, we are righteous people, Tahir manachnu, we are pure people, that's the test. And the dalad is daka manachnu, we are clean. And the kof is kadesh manachnu, we are holy. That's the man tzadik. How can we justify ourselves? Look at our record, look what type of people we are. We didn't do it. We don't know how it's here, but that's uman tzadik, and how can we justify ourselves? So that concludes the topics of the malocha of ksiva with the final mishnah now, which the mishnah begins. Hakosev beis oisis b'shtei halamim. Someone that writes two letters in two laps of awareness. How is that? Acher Shachar. So Achaz ben Abayim, he wrote one letter in the morning and one in the afternoon. That is, since there was such a long break in between the two of them, with the amount of time that you could realize what you had done was wrong, that's considered like two halamas, like two laps of awareness. For that case, we have a machlokes, Rimlil Machayev, Macham Poitrim. Rimlil holds that you're liable, and that is, we combine the two letters that you wrote to be chayev for the malach of ksivu, in spite of the fact that you realized in between what you had done. Macham say you're pater. To which the Gemara asks about my commitment, what is their machlokes based on? He says there is the concept of awareness does not apply to half a measurement, and that is there's a concept of yediyah that and a lapse of yediyah. To be chayav chatzis, you have to do b'shogeg without noticing what you had done wrong. That's a lapse of awareness. Then to be chayav on the chatzis is when you become aware of it, you're cognizant of what you had done wrong. Then you bring the chatzis. Now that's the process how it's possible. If you did only one letter and then you forgot, and that you had done, but you forgot when you did it, and then you recalled what you had done wrong. That's called the yediyah. Yediyah cannot be chal. It's only chal when you do an entire thing that's wrong. Then you say that the yediyah is chal. Here, where you realize in between, but then you forgot again. You did another letter. It's as if it was one lapse of awareness. Whereas Rabban Sarva yes yediyah lechatzishir, but Rabban Hol know that there is an awareness for a half a shir, and that is therefore we see them as separate acts, and therefore they cannot combine with the other letter to make it into two letters to be chayav for karma chatas, because it requires one lapse of awareness and then the idea afterwards. Here where you realize in between the two letters, we view them as separate acts. Taisa explains, so what is pshat in Ringel Mil? Why does he hold that there is no yediyah? L'chay, the yediyah is mechalak, it separates the two letters. So it says, because it says in the pasuk regarding the chiyuv of chatas for an lapse of awareness that you had, or became known to him his sin, which is that only if he has a yediyah of chatas, that is, only that will be considered yediyah, that's something that makes you liable for a karma chatas. But a yediyah, an awareness that is not on the karma chatas, for example, in this case, where a chatz yishir, where after you wrote one letter, that's not a yediyah of a chatas, you didn't do something that's making you liable for a chatas, because you need two letters. So the fact that you had an awareness is not a chalois of a yediyah, and therefore, in such a case, it's not called the yediyah, and that's why, as if you didn't realize, and therefore the two acts of lapse of awareness of the two letters will combine, and therefore Ibn Lil holds that in yediyah l'chatz ishe, and therefore you're going to be chayiv, even though you wrote one in the morning and one in the afternoon, and that you were aware of it in between. Hadnu l'chabayna, we shall return to you, perek habayna, the 12th perek of Masechta Shabbos. Now we begin the 13th perek of Masechta Shabbos. So this perek continues with the same idea, the previous perek explaining the different av malachas. So Rabbi Elazar says, and he's coming to explain the measurement of oirig, of weaving, which is counted in one of the 39 av malachas. As it says in the Mishnah, it says in Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph, that shnei chutin, that generally, to be chayif ariga of weaving is to weave two threads together. However, Rabbi Elazar says that sometimes it's not going to be two. That is, oirig shloisha chutin betchila. To be liable in the beginning of weaving is if you weave three threads together, that will be considered a malacha of ariga, because in the beginning two is not enough. To start it off, it needs three. V'achas ala orig, and or if you're coming to add on one onto what was previously woven, and you add on even one more to add it to what was done, chayiv, you're going to be liable. Even though you didn't do two, you only did one, but since it's adding to something that's already there, that one is significant. V'achamayim, they say no. Whether it was in the beginning, as you're just starting, or whether it's at the end, the measurement is always going to be two threads. That's the liability for the malacha of ariga, not like what Rabbi Elazar said. Now the Gemara continues on to another malacha related to the process of weaving. If someone sets the two hetel eyes, which are these are the two rings that are made when in the weaving process, there's the vertical threads, which are called the warp threads, and then you have the horizontal threads, which are called the weft threads. And what happens is that you have to do up one over on over under. You have to go between the things to make this grid of creating the garments. So therefore, there was a process of these things which would pull up all the odd ones and all the even threads to be able to get the horizontal thread through it at one time to simplify the process. So in the heddles, as the Mishnah says, that there was these heddle eyes, which is basically these threads which would pick up the all the odd in one side and the even ones on the other side, and to be able to pass the weft thread through it, there was a little a ring, the hole that was going through that was able to pick up all the threads at one time. So if someone sets these eyes, which is putting together the process of being able to weave, if he does this benirin in heddles, or bekiris, which all these ideas are going to be discussed in the Gemara, what they are, or benafo in a fine sieve, or bechvari in a coarse sieve, ubisal and in a basket. And Rashi tells us that these are not really heddles when we're talking about a sieve and a basket. Rather, over here, they would just twist one thread of the weft on the top and the bottom of the warp thread, and that would hold the chassis, the vertical threads, in its place to be able to allow them to go in and out, in and out. So, but it's called over here in this context as heddle eyes, because it accomplishes the same goal as the heddle eyes, which allows us to go and weave in and out the weft threads through the warp threads. But that these ideas, if someone sets these heddle eyes in all these different cases, in the heddle and the kiris and the nafa and the chvar and the sal, chayiv is going to be liable again, because this sets up, this is one of the processes they had to do to set up the weaving, the loom, the weaving process, whatever it is, to be able to weave. If someone goes and sets that up, which in this context is being called the heddle eyes, which is what holds it together, either pulling it up and down in a regular loom, or in the case of the basket, or in the sieves, is that it holds it on the top and the bottom, that you wrap one weft thread around the top and one around the bottom so that it stays in one place that you can go in and out. Either way, that will be make a person liable for what's called oisa bate nirin, of making the heddle eyes. And now the Mishnah concludes with two other malachas. V'hatayfer beis tfir, so someone sews two stitches. Or another malach is v'akayrei amanas litfa beis tfir, he tears with the intention to then go ahead and to sew two stitches. For these cases, you're going to be chayiv for doing a malacha on Shabbos, one for teifer, and the other one for the malacha of kareya, of ripping on Shabbos. So now the Gemara goes to elaborate and discuss our Mishnah. Ki Asar Yitzchak, when Yitzchak came to Bavel, Tani Shtaim, he quoted our Mishnah that too, that is when Rebbe Elazar says that whoever weaves two threads in the beginning, and that Rebbe Elazar was only arguing the Rabbanan regarding the case of adding on one on an already woven garment. But regarding the beginning, he also says two. But the Gemara asks, well, not Gimel, but we learned in our Mishnah that three. Rebbe Elazar says you're only liable for having three threads in the beginning, not two. So how could he have brought down this Messiah that it's two? So Gemara says, Loikasha, it's not a contradiction, it's not a difficulty. Habalimi, habiktini. One of them are talking about that the threads were thick, and one of them is talking about that it was thin. And Amri lo lahaygisav. Some say that it was one way, and some say a different way. And that is as follows. Amri lo lahaygisav. Some give the interpretation as follows: that it was the thick threads that needs three and not two, because two are going to unravel, because since they're very thick, they don't stick well together, and therefore you need to have three. And it was the thin one that we said you're going to be liable even for just two threads in the beginning. As the Gemara says, Alimi, when they're thick threads, Talasa loy sasri. If they're three at least, then they're not going to unravel. Trey sasri, but if they're two, they will unravel. But Ktini, the thin ones, Trey nami loy sasri, two also will not unravel. And therefore, his tradition, that Yitzchak said that it's two, was talking about the thin threads. Our Mishnah that said in each three is talking about thick threads, and therefore it's not a contradiction. V'amri lo lahagis, and some say the other way around, that it was the thick ones that you're liable for even two. As the Gemara says, Kitini, when they're thin, Talos Yediyah, only three threads are noticeable that you're even making something. Trela Yediyah, but two threads are not noticeable, and therefore on that you're going to be potter. Alimi, but thick threads, Trey Nam Yediyah, even two threads are noticeable that you could see it, and therefore you're going to be chayiv, but by the thin ones, two, you're going to be potter. So therefore, when our Mishnah said you need to have three, was going on the case of the thin threads. But when Rabbi Yitzchak came and said a tradition of two, that was going on the thick threads, because even two of thick, you could still see. So now related to the topic of our Mishnah, the Gemara brings Tanya, we learned in the Braisa. Ha'ori gimel chutin b'tchilev, someone weaves three threads in the beginning, or the echad ala oreg, or he adds one on what was already woven. So chayiv is going to be liable, which is again the opinion of as we find Rabbi Elazar in our Mishnah. As we find in the Mishnah that whether it was in the beginning, whether it was at the end, the measurement is going to be two threads. It doesn't make a difference whether it's adding on to what was already there or that you're just starting. However, we introduce a new concept, ubisafa, regarding the edge of a garment. Beis chutin b'reichiv gimel batinim. The measurement to be liable is two threads on the width of a measurement of three batinim. That is, there are people that they weave around the garment at the edge, the length of the garment, from a totally different type of a thread, of a warp thread. And the width is along it's along the whole length of the garment. And how wide is it on the garment? That's the width of the measurement of what would be three batei nirin, these three hetalais. And someone that weaves two threads of weft over there, he's going to be liable. So the Gemara says, halamaza daima, what can this be compared to? What is it analogous to? In other words, why are you going to be liable for weaving even such a small amount? And we don't say, as it says in the Mishnah, that whoever's weaving in the middle of a garment, it has to be a different measurement. It has to be larger. It has to be the width of a sit, which is the measurement, the distance between the index finger and the middle finger, which is larger. So why over here do we say that you're liable even for a smaller amount, which is these two threads? And that is because it could be compared to la'orig tzilzel katan, someone that weaves a small belt. And that is a small belt that's not wider than three batei nirin, as the Gemara says, beis chutin b'reichiv gimel batei nirin, that the belt is two threads on the width of three batei nirin. That is, since that is the size of the belt, that's considered chashiv because it's its own unique area. That's a full belt. Same thing over here regarding the edge, although generally we need it a little bit bigger, the width of a sit, and which is a larger amount than two threads, and in the width of three batei nirin. But since here the edge is its own unique area that we use a different thread over there and it's a different design, so therefore even in that small amount it will make a person liable for weaving on Shabbos. Now incidentally the Gemara is me'or, it tells us that when it's said in the beginning of this braisa, it said be'oyre gimel chutin betchila, that whoever weaves three threads in the beginning, ve'echad ala arik, and or one at the end adding on to a ready woven garment, that his chayv is going to be liable. So the Gemara comments, Stamak Reb Elazar is telling us that the Stam of this Braisa, who is that? That's Reb Elazar, as we said, that he's mentioned on Mishnah, stating the same idea. And therefore, this Braisa, the Stam, is showing us, even like Reb Elazar. Tanya Idach learned a different Braisa, that Ha'erig Bezkutin Alagas, someone weaves two threads on a larger piece that has already woven a lot on. Or Vala Imra on the border. That is, he's starting the border of the garment, that he's weaving he's weaving the weft thread from a different type, and that is for the border. Chayiv is going to be liable. Belezaimer afila echad. Belezaimer says that even one, as we mentioned on Mishnah, that if you're adding on, you're going to be liable even for one thread because it's already a woven part is already there from before. Ubisafa, and regarding the edge, that is for the length of the warp threads that you're making this. Shnei chutin berechiv shloisha batinir and chayiv. That if you do two threads and the width of three petalized, then you're going to be liable. So the Gemara says, "Halamaza daima." What could this be compared to? As we mentioned in the previous price, someone that weaves a small little belt that shnei chud na reichiv gimel batinir, and that's two threads on the width of three petalized, which is its own distinct measurement. That these, as we mentioned before, that the petalized are the different strings that go between the loom that picks it up and down. That thickness is the thickness of these two threads of how much of the garment it takes up, and that's the idea of why you're going to be chayiv even that amount on the edge. Because again, although we say generally in the middle of a garment it needs more than that, it needs the width of a sit, but here, since it's its own unique designated place and you use a different thread, therefore you're going to be chayiv even that smaller share. So again, the Gemara comments that when it started off this price, it said the Tanakama va'irik beis chutin alagas v'aleim rechayiv, that whoever weaves two threads on the larger piece that was already there, or on the border, that's going to make you liable. So Gemara says, stomach Rabban. Here, this stam of this price was like Rabban that said that even if it's in the beginning of a garment, or it was something that's adding on to already previous garment, is always two threads. Not like Rabbi Lazo says the beginning is three and the end is even one. It's always going to be two threads. So if we have one price of stomach like Rabbi Lazo and one price of stomach Rabban. Now the Gemara resumes discussing the Mishnah. We said, Oisa beis batei nirin v'chulu, whoever makes two hetalais in the nirin, that will make a person liable. So now the Gemara will elaborate exactly on this process of the loom, of the weaving machine that helps us weave. What does it mean to make two hetalais on this nirin? So the Gemara asked, my banirin, what does it mean making two hetalais, which again we said is that little ring or hole that from this string that can pick up all the odd or even ones to be able to pass the thread in between. So that makes the weaving process that has, as garments are, it's interwoven, the strings that are the vertical and the horizontal. So you might ask, what are these nirin? So Amar Abaye, Abaye explains, and this was obviously what they had, the machinery in those days, that it's tarti bebote nira. There's a rope that's wrapped around two times around the warp threads as a form of making heddle loops, v'chad de benira, and one time around the heddle rope itself. And that is, as Rashi explains to us, that what happened is that they had a certain rod, and there was a rope coming down from the rod that would be looped around two times around the first warp thread, and that was be able to go up and down, to be able to pick up all the odd numbers, and you had another one picking up the even ones, and then you had a one time around the rope itself. That is, the third time you looped it around the rope itself, and it was looped it was connected to the rod. So again, we have this, to conceptualize, you have this rod and you have this rope coming down, which is called, that's the nirin. That rope is then goes around and we have this, all these warp threads. These are the vertical threads that are set up to be able to have the horizontal ones to go through it. So now you have this rope coming down from this rod, and then it wraps around two times around the first warp thread, then it wraps it around the rope itself, and then it goes up to the rod, it comes down, and it goes to the third one, then to the fifth, then to the seventh, then to the ninth, it goes to all the odd ones. And therefore, when you pick up that string, which is the rope, that is the nirin that you're making heddle eyes from, that, again, making heddle eyes is the concept of making these holes to be able to pick up these threads, which again is similar to the concept we spoke about in the Mishnah regarding the basket and the sieves, which is the concept of being allowing us to be able to pass the weft, the horizontal threads through it. Here it's by picking it up, and there it's by holding it in place to be able to pass through. So that is, it wraps it around, then you have one picking up the odd ones, then you make a different one, a different rod, with a string coming down from it, a rope, to be able to pick up the even ones. And then you have, you alternate them and thereby passing through. And then it instead of having to go up, up, down, over, under, you could just do it at one time through the other way by picking up the other ones. That is the concept of making two bate nirin in the nirin. The nirin are, is this rope, this header rope which comes down. And as the Gemara explained to us how it's done, two times first around the warp thread, then the rope itself, and then it goes to the third one, fifth, as we explained. So now the Mishnah continued and said another way of being over on the Malacha of making the spati nirin, the hetalize, is by doing it not just in the nirin, which is in the classic weaving experience in the loom. There's also bakiris. So it's my bakiris. What is a kiris? Amarav, another classic way is mitsuvisa. It's a hetal frame. And as Rashi explains, it's the weavers that would make the curtain, that they would weave it with petals. And the petal would be picking up these different frames, and that's in place of the rod that goes up and down, that we said that these are the ways that the women weave. The more professionals, the weavers themselves, they would have these frames which would go up and down with the petals. They would step on them and go up, and that's how we'd be able to do it quickly. That's this kiris. Again, that's another way of being over on making a bate nirin. Again, if you set up these frames and putting in the threads to allow you to put the warp threads through that, putting up those frames is making bate nirin. Again, that's the malacha of shtei bate nirin. Then the Mishnah continues, the hatoifa based first, and someone that sews two stitches, he's also chayv on the malacha of toifer on Shabbos. The Gemara asks, hatanina bavas malachas, this was already mentioned when we spoke about all the lamates malachas in Klal Gadol. Ba'atayva based tefiris, and someone that sews two stitches. And therefore, why do we have to go ahead and repeat over here in this parak, in the 13th parak of Masechet Shabbos, again, the idea about toifer based tefiris? And that is, you're not adding anything. In other words, Bishleim Oirig, I can understand why we repeated the malacha of weaving. Because of the machloikis that's mentioned on Mishnah, because of the concept of Oisesh Shtei Bate Nirin, and to teach us about regarding the heddles and the kirois and the coarse sieve and the fine sieve and the basket, which wasn't said over there. So for all these halachas related to that malacha, we had to repeat it. But regarding stitching, we don't add anything more than what we said over there. So why do we say Hatoifa based tefiris? And then the Gemara says, Mishum de Geboi Lemis Nesefa, because we wanted to teach you the following halacha, which is related to stitching, which is Vahakareya Amanas Litva based tefiris, that regarding someone that tears something, which is its own malacha, with the intent to then to go ahead and sew up two stitches. To which the Gemara asks, yeah, so that's why Ketani Namat Tefis. That's why we said sewing up the stitches, because we wanted to say regarding ripping to be able to sew it up. But the Gemara asks, Vahakareya Hanamitin Babas Malachis. That was also mentioned over there. Someone that tears is mentioned as one of the Amalachas. So again, why do we repeat Taifa? Because of Kareya. Kareya is also mentioned over there. So rather, the Gemara says, Elam Shem the Gaboy Lemisna Sefer, as because we wanted to say the Sefer of this, which is the coming Mishnah, which is Hakareya Bachamase Val Mesa. Because we wanted to tell the concept, the Alocha concept of someone that tears out of anger or as a mourning over a person of his that had died. That's why we taught the halacha of someone that sews two stitches because of saying the tearing. And the tearing we said because of the next Mishnah, which is saying certain types of tearing, which we had not mentioned over there, not classic tearing with intention to go ahead and sew it up, but rather because out of anger or out of a sign of mourning. So we continue discussing the Mishnah that said v'hakirei amanas litva shtei tefiris. We said that if someone tears with the intention to sew up two stitches, that's also av malacha. You're going to be liable for kirei over there. So the Gemara says, heich mishkachla, where do you ever find that someone tears something to then go ahead and sew it up? What do you mean? If it's not torn, you're obviously ripping it. It's not torn, so then why are you tearing it to then go ahead and sew it up? So we continue on Talmud Beis, where the Gemara says that there are times where we have to rip it. The avda, because it's when it was the beggar, when the garment was made, kikista like a pocket. And that is, it was made clumpy and it was folded over where the garment is not smooth, it's not even, and it sticks out a little bit like a pocket. So then you have to tear the garment from the bottom and then you have to smooth it out. And then the stitches will be able to be smooth. That's a time when you're ripping with intention and then to go ahead and restitch it. That will be the malacha, the amalacha of Korea, of ripping on Shabbos. Now we continue with the next Mishnah, which was the whole idea why we even introduced a stitching and tearing to stitch, which is the following case. Hakireya b'chamasi, someone that tears out of anger, v'al mesai, or mourning over someone of his that had died, or v'cholam akalklin, or all destructive acts, peturin, you're exempt. That is, here you're not going to be chayv for kireya because you didn't do a constructive act to be able to stitch it up, rather because you're upset, you're tearing or mourning, it's destructive, That is not a constructive act, which are what all malachas of Shabbos require. And therefore, mekalkel is always a concept which is p'tur. It's not mechayev you for the halachas of Shabbos. However, if someone does destroy with the intention to repair, then shiur k'misakin, then the measurement will be for the liability of the destructive act. How much is the same measurement of the rectification of fixing it? And that is, as we find by classic career, when you tear with the intention to fix, if you tear the amount of being able to sew up two stitches, that's the amount you're going to be liable for the malach of career of ripping. So the Mishnah continues with other malachas related to the production of wool, which is what we're discussing regarding weaving. Shir hamalabin, the measurement regarding the malacha of whitening, the habanapits, and disentangling, these are things that we do with wool, vateveya, and dyeing, vateveya, and spinning. Those measurements are kumalei roichiv hasit kafel. It's double the width of a sit. And that is, the Gemara explains that sit is the distance between the index finger and the middle finger. As much as a person could stretch them apart, that's called the distance of a sit. And therefore, if he spins, or if he whitens, or if he disentangles, or if he dyes, which are all amalachas, and he does this with one thring, the measurement of this double sit, then he's going to be liable for this malacha. V'ho'erik shnei chutin. And if someone weaves two threads, so shiuri, his measurement is, and the width of the garment, is kamloi hasit. That's not a double width of a sit. That's the measurement of a full sit. And even if he didn't weave this along the entire width of the garment, he only does this distance. That's enough. If he did two threads, the distance of a sit, in the middle of the garment, and he didn't go through the whole garment, that's enough to make him liable for the malacha of ariga, of weaving on Shabbos. So now the Gemara discusses our Mishnah. We said that if someone tears out of anger, he's going to be pata. Verminu, it seems to be a contradiction from a brisa. We learned hakireya b'chamas, is someone that tears out of anger, uve evloy, or out of mourning, v'amesa, or over his dead, chayiv, is going to be liable. And this is the question that we see, that you're liable even if you tore it out of anger or out of mourning. And the brisa comments, v'av pisha machal l'shabbos, even though obviously he desecrated the Shabbos by being over one of the avmalachas on Shabbos by tearing, but yotzidei kriya, he has absolved himself from his chiyuv of kriya, which a person has to rip on one of his kriyvim that passes away, that he has to rice kriya, like it's called, to rip and render his garment. But the problem is, we have this contradiction that the brisa says that you're chayiv and the Mishnah says that you're potter. So the Gemara says, loy kasha, habimeis di day, habimeis di alma. That is, regarding the case that we said in the brisa that you're going to be chayiv, that's talking about by his own mess, which means a person that he has to rice kriya on, like we said, that he's going to absolve himself from that chayiv, that he has to render his garments and rip them. And therefore, that kriya, that tearing, was not an act of kilkel, of destruction. Rather, it was a tikkun, because that was yaitze his chayiv. He has a mitzvah to do that, and that's a rectification, and that's why you're chayiv. Regarding our Mishnah that says you're going to be potter, was talking about that it was on some random person, so to speak. And that's not considered mice of tikkun, because you don't have a chiv to do kriya. That's destructive. And therefore, that's why you're going to be potter. To which the Gemara asks, how can you say that our Mishnah is talking about a person that he doesn't, that's not a relative of his, that he has to rip and render his garments? But our Mishnah says explicitly that it was over, that he tore it over his dead person, which sounds like someone that he has to do it. So that the Gemara answers, yeah, you're right. Correct that it's talking about someone that it's his dead, in other words, that he has to bury that type of person. It's a relative of his. However, it's talking about in reference to a person that he does not have a chiyuv of mourning over them. And though, because those are only those which are said in Parashas Kohanim, in Vayikra, Perek Chof Aleph, Aviv, v'imoi, b'noi, ubitoi, v'achiv, v'achaisei, his father, his mother, his son, his daughter, his brother, and his sister. Other people, although he has an obligation to bury them, that it's his liability, but it's talking about a person that he does not have a chiyuv of avelus, and therefore the kriya, the ripping, is not any tikkun at all, because you're not fulfilling a mitzvah with that. And therefore, our Mishnah says that it's a maisa kilkel. So though it's meisai, but it's still going to be a destructive act, because you had no chiyuv of ripping, of tearing. Whereas the brisa was talking about something that you have a chiyuv of avelus for, and therefore the kriya is considered a constructive act and not destructive. But then the Gemara asks, v'i chachamu, if this person that we're saying that you're exempt from is a sage, is a Talmud Chacham that passed away, b'chiyuv mechayv, then you would be liable to do kriya. And since you're obligated in doing the kriya and ripping your clothing, so then it is mesakin, it is fixing. So then why does our Mishnah say that you're potter? As the Gemara brings, the Talmud in the Braisa, Chacham Shemes, if a sage dies, Hakol Krev, everyone is his relative. The Gemara asks, Hakol Krev, so that, you think everyone's his relative? What does that mean? Ele'ema Hakol Krev, what it means to say is that everyone's like his relative, which is Hakol Karin Olav, everyone has to render and rip his garments on him. Hakol Choltzin Olav, everyone has to bear themselves, that is, they have to tear their clothing, their outer garments, up until the shoulder, that the shoulder is going to be bare. And a komavarin alav brachav, and everyone gets fed the first meal in the street. And that is, they would feed the mourner the first meal in the street. And that he wasn't able to eat from his own food; they had to bring him food. As the Torah, as HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Yecheskel, he said, "Lechem anoshem lo yisoicha," that you should not eat the bread of men. Which the mashmoyis, the inference was that every other mourner is supposed to eat his first meal in the street. So everyone is considered the relatives, and everyone has to eat their first meal in the street. And therefore, the question is that if this person is a sage, then there is a chiyuv of kriya for everybody. So how, even if it's not one of those that a father, a mother, and all those which have a chiyuv of kriya, but there is a chiyuv of kriya if he's a sage. So the Gemara says, obviously our Mishnah was talking about leitzichet lav chachamu. Obviously when the Mishnah says that it's an act of kilkul, that it's destructive, the ripping of the garment, that there is no chiyuv of kriya, someone that is not a sage. But then the Gemara continues the same line of questioning. But v'i'adim kasher hu chiyuv mechayiv. Even if he's not a sage, but he's just an upright standing person, you're also obligated to do the kriya, and therefore yet it should be masakin and not kilkul, and you should be chayiv for ripping on Shabbos. The time like we learned in the Braisa. Why is it that a person's sons and daughters will pass away when they're very young? And the reason is, so that he should weep and mourn over an upright person. So the Gemara asks, wait a second. His children die young so that he should cry and weep over an upstanding person? What do you mean? Do they take security from him? What do you mean? Before he even sins, they already take the security and say, we're going to take away your children so that you fulfill it, right? Wait a second, wait till the person is over on that. So rather, the Gemara says, rather, the idea is why a person's children will die young is because he did not cry and mourn over an upstanding person. And the reason is, that's because whoever cries, sheds tears over an upstanding person, they forgive him on all his sins because of the honor that he made for that upstanding person. So therefore you see that you have to mourn and rice kriya and rip your clothing over an upstanding person, even if he's not a sage. So the Gemara says, Lo yitzrichet lav adam kashu. Obviously our Mishnah that says that it's an act of kilka, it's a destructive act. It's talking about that the person was not an upstanding adam kashu. But then the Gemara still asks, Ve'ide koi b'shas yitzis neshama chiyuv mechayim. If you're just standing there at the time when his soul leaves him, when he passes away, you're still obligated to do kriya, even if he's not adam kashu. The time like we learned in the Braisa, whoever standing near a person that's dying, a dead person, as his neshama, his soul leaves him, he has to rip his clothing. What is this analogous to? What can you compare this to prove this? Let's say to a sefer Torah, a Torah scroll that's burnt. And that is, as we learn in Masechtas Mo'ed Katan, that a sefer Torah that's burnt, a person that sees that has to rip his clothing. And as we find by the Megillah that Yahyakim burnt, as says over there in the Pasuk, that the Taina was, that they weren't afraid and they didn't rip their clothing, that you're supposed to rip your clothing when you see a Sefer Torah that's being burnt. So too, a neshama, a soul of a Jewish person that's taken away, is the same thing because you don't have even the emptiest Jew that doesn't have some Torah mitzvahs, and therefore it's like a Sefer Torah that's being burnt when his soul leaves him. And therefore you see that if you're there, even on any Jew, when the soul passed away, that you do have to rip kriya. So the Gemara says, obviously, our Mishnah is talking about that you weren't there when the soul left him, and he's not an adam kasher, and he's not a chacham, and therefore you don't have to do kriya, and that's why the kriya is a destructive act, and it's not a ma'asev tikkun. So the Gemara says, okay, tenach mesa, you resolve the contradiction regarding the Braisa and the Mishnah regarding his dead person, that the Braisa that says that you're going to be chayiv is talking about someone that you have a chayiv of kriya for, and our Mishnah is talking about someone that you don't have a chayiv of kriya for, and therefore it's considered a destructive act. But we still have the contradiction of the anger. The Braisa says that you're liable for ripping out of anger, and our Mishnah says you're going to be potter. So the Gemara says, that's also not a difficulty regarding the contradiction of anger, because Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, one of them is going like the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, and one is going like Rabbi Shimon. As the Gemara says, Rabbi Yehuda, the Braisa, the town of the Braisa that says you're chayiv, that's Rabbi Yehuda. The Amma that he says, which is a famous machlekes between Rabbi Yehuda and Shimon brought down many places and many times in Masechta Shabbos, that a malacha, a productive act on Shabbos that's not necessary for the act that you're doing itself, that you're going to be liable for. And that is, for example, if you're taking out a corpse from the Rishus HaYochid to Rishus HaRab, where you don't need that act, you don't really need the mess out there, you just don't want them here, it's just preventing something else, that's called malacha that you don't need for it itself, that you are still liable, and therefore over here, where you're ripping the garment, although that you don't need the actual rip, which is the malacha, but since it's helping you, it's calming you down, so therefore that's considered malacha shein tzrich legufa, and you're going to be liable. Whereas ha, the town of our Mishnah that says yipater, that was Reb Shimon, the amma malacha shein tzrich legufa is patrala, that when it's an act that you don't need for it itself. Here the tearing is not, you don't actually need the tear. The tear would be necessary only if, let's say, you need it to be sewn up or you need to make an opening. You need a tear, the actual tear. Here the tearing is only indirect, that it's ain't tzrich legufa, you don't need it for the tear, but it's just helping you with something else. And that you patrala, and that's why the town of our Mishnah says if you do it out of anger, you're going to be patrala. But then the Gemara asks, Eimin the Shamat Le'er Yehuda b'mesaken. When did we ever hear this concept of Rebbe Yehuda, that a malacha she'ein tzrich legufa, that you don't need for the act itself, rather it's just helping you indirectly with something else, that still you're going to be chayav, that's by mesaken when you're rectifying something. That is, you're doing something, you're doing a malacha v'itzah, you're doing something productive, constructive, yet you're only needed for something else, and this is only indirectly helping you there, that's what you're going to be chayav on. But Makalkal Mishamali, did you ever hear him say it regarding a destructive act? That is here, this kareya is destructive. Because you're just ripping, you're tearing, you're breaking, you're smashing. And that can't be considered malacha she'ein tzrich legufa. You're right, of course it's in the tzrich legufa. You don't need it for the actual tearing. But it can't be considered malacha at all. Because malachas always connote something constructive, productive. And here it's destructive, not constructive. So therefore, yes, it's ein tzrich legufa, but still even he would agree that you're not going to be chayiv if it's destructive, only if it's constructive. And that the Gemara says, no, Amr Babin, hay nami mesakenu. This act is also considered something that's rectifying. It is constructive. How so? Because he's doing something satisfying for his inclination. That is, it calms him down. You know, he has something that's bothering him, he's upset, and he smashes something, he breaks something. So that's considered constructive also. To which the Gemara asks, is that so? Kihai gavn mishari? Is something like that permitted? In other words, what we're going to prove is that obviously it's not mesakin, because you're teaching yourself, you're accustoming yourself to have your bad nature come forth, and it allows you to just blow up and do your things. Yes, it helps you calm down, but it's goading you on, and it makes you get even angrier next time. It's unproductive, it's unhealthy, as the Gemara brings, about time learned in the Braisa. Shimon Laza Oyma, Misham Chilfa Ba'igra, Sha'ama, that he said, Misham Rebichim and Nuri, Hamakireya Begodav Bechamosi, if someone that tears his garments out of anger, or Vahamashaba Kela Bechamosi, or he breaks his garments, or his clothing, or his vessels in his anger, or Vahamafaza Ma'isa Bechamosi, he throws out his money in his anger, Yehei Be'necha Ka'ibra Badaza, that person should be in your eyes like an idol worshiper. Because that is the profession of the evil incarnation. What does he do? Today he tells you do this. No, you're not doing any avaris per se. What am I doing? I'm just banging, I'm just smashing. I didn't. What did I do wrong? And tomorrow he tells you, do this. Until he tells you, go serve idols. And he serves idols. And the idea is, you have no control. You don't have control over yourself. Who's controlling you? Your inclination. That's the idea. He tells you, he goads you on, you can't control yourself, so you smash something, you break something. So obviously he's in control, not you. Oh, he's in control. You can end up serving idols because he tells you what to do and you don't tell him what to do. So therefore, the Gemara says, this is a bad thing. It's destructive and it has no constructive concept at all. As the Gemara says, I'm above in micro, what's a pasuk that shows this concept? It's a pasuk in Tehillim that says, lo yeh v'cha elzar. It should not be in you. The word v'cha should not be in you. A strange god. And that is, the word v'cha sounds like inside of you. That is, if you have this inside of you, that means your yetzahara, then ultimately you're going to serve a foreign god, as the pasuk ends, and you should not bow down to an alien god. That is, if you're going to have this v'cha inside of you, this strange god, then you end up bowing down, you end up doing avoid desires. The Gemara says, Ezehu elzar, sheish b'guf shel adam, what is considered a strange god inside the person? That is the evil inclination. if you break stuff, if you have no control of your anger, you have inside of you this ilzar, then ultimately you're going to end up serving avodah zarah. You have no control. It's not you, it's him. So the Gemara's question is obviously that it's forbidden to tear something out of anger, and that's totally destructive. It has no constructive purpose whatsoever. So again, we're back to the question, how could you say that the Tanna of the Braisa says, Rabbi Yehuda, that he says, Melocha Shein Tzirich L'Guf is Chayiv, because it's indirectly helping you, but that it's constructive, it has no constructive purpose whatsoever, and even he would agree that you're not going to be Chayiv. So the Gemara says, you're right. We're not talking about someone when he's tearing out of anger per se that he's really angry. He's only doing it externally, outwardly, to instill fear on the people in his house. And therefore, that is constructive. It shows them that, watch yourself, I want you to know, Tati's upset or whatever it is, he's trying to show people to stay in line. That's not destructive because he's not really angry. He is in control. He's just outwardly showing that he's upset. That's considered constructive, and therefore, Yehuda holds that, although it's not tzrich legufa, but he holds the melocha shein tzrich legufa v'chayiv, here it is constructive, has constructive purpose, and therefore, you're going to be chayiv. As the Gemara shows that many Tamid HaChacham, they had done this, that they showed an outwardly upsetness so that people should stay in line to have a certain structure in the home. Ki hadra Yehuda sholof mitzuv yasa. That he pulled off the border of his garment out of anger, so to speak, to show that he's angry, that they should be afraid. Oh my God, you know, look, he's upset. He wasn't really upset. He was in control, but it's necessary sometimes to show this as if he's upset. Similarly, Rav Acha ben Yaakov, Tovim Ani Tvi, he would break already broken kelim. Right? It's Bal Tashchis, not break something, but it was already broken. He would say, smash it, and would go flying to pieces. I was like, what's going on over here? He's upset. Rav Sheshesh Rami Lola Amsei Munina Aresha. Rav Sheshesh threw fish brine at his maidservant's head, again showing his displeasure. And Rav Abba Tavar Nachtama. Rav Abba, he broke the lid of a pitcher. Again, what we see from the Gemara is obviously no anger whatsoever. That's totally destructive, has no constructive purpose whatsoever, and that would be considered a total act of kilka. And even Rabbi Yehuda holds Melocha Shein Tzirich L'Guf is Chayiv would hold that you're going to be put on such an act. However, what we're showing is that when it's being done just with the conscious thought process to direct one's family or in certain instances, then that's allowed, and that would be considered a constructive act. So now the Gemara resumes what we mentioned before regarding crying over an Adam Kasher, over an upstanding person. So Amr B'Shem Ben Pazi, Amr B'Shu Ben Levi, B'Shem Ba'Kapar, Kalamayri Demoyis Al Adam Kasher, whoever sheds tears on an upstanding person, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Soifan U'Manichem Be'ez Kandot. HaKadosh Baruch Hu counts the tears and he puts them in his storehouse. Shalom, like it says in Pasuk in Tehillim, David HaMelech says to Hashem, Noidi Safarta Ata. You counted my wanderings. That means Hashem sees everything. Sima Demasi V'Noidecha. You placed my tears in your flask. Haloi B'Sifra Asecha. Are they not in your account? And that is, we find the counting over here. And regarding the tears, that Hashem puts it in his flask, that Hashem counts the tears, and he puts it in his storehouse. Amar Yehuda, Amar Rav, similarly, kol ha'matzal b'aspeidei shel chacham. Whoever is lazy in regards to eulogizing a sage, ro l'kov b'chayiv, is fit to be buried alive. Shnem, like it says the pasuk in Yeshua, v'yikbru isa b'gvul nachlasi, that they buried him in reference to Yeshua, on the border of his inheritance, of where his plot was, b'timna serach asher b'har Ephraim, that was in the mountain of Ephraim, mitzvoin lahar Gosh, to the north of Har Gosh. Now, why does it mention that it was to the north of Har Gosh? Why is that relevant? Comes to teach us the following drasha, malamit shirogish aleim har lahargan. Teaches us that the mountain trembled to kill them. That's Gosh, related to Rogash, that they wanted to kill him because they didn't eulogize him properly. And how do we know that? As Tosis says from the Tosis Shans, that it doesn't. We don't find anywhere there in Yeshua that it says that they cried over him 30 days, as it says by Moshe and Aaron. So obviously they didn't. They weren't masped him kero, and therefore they were misatzel. So therefore they were fit to be buried alive, and the mountains were trembling. Let's go ahead and bury these people. So Amr B'chia Bar Abba Amr B'yechanun, kol misatzel be'aspeidei shel chacham. Similarly, whoever is lazy to eulogize the sage, ein marchiyam, he does not live a long time. Mida connected me that that's tit for tat, it's measure for measure. That is, he didn't mourn over the fact that this sage's days were cut short. So also for his days, for his life, they're not, they don't care about from Shemayim, and therefore he's going to die young also. Shnem, like it says the pasuk in Yeshaya, how do you know about the concept of Mida connected me, the famous concept that a person gets in response, exact measure of what he's done, whether good or bad? As it says, b'sasa, b'shalcha t'rivena, that He will contend with her when he sends her away with a precise measure. And that is a person gets mida keneged mida, exact measure, how he acts. That's the measurement, how he gets back in response. And therefore, since he doesn't care about the sages' lives that were short, so his life will be short. The Rishon Gemara asks on these two statements, Esvir b'chiyah b'rabbi Rabbi Yechanan, there's a pasuk in Shoftim that says, "V'yavdu ha'am es Hashem kol yimei Yeshua," that the nation served Hashem all the days of Yeshua, b'chol yimei Askein, all the days of this king that came after Yeshua. Asher harichu yom achi Yeshua, that they had lived long lives after Yeshua. So obviously they were not punished; they lived long lives. And you said that they didn't mourn Yeshua properly, and they were supposed to be buried alive, but they weren't. But they didn't. They were, definitely shouldn't live a long time. And here we see that they lived a long life, even though they didn't mourn Yeshua properly. So Amalei said to him, Bavloi, Babylonian. This is a reference to Reb Chiya that came up from Bavel. Yomim harichu, shonim lo harichu. They had long days, but not long years. And what that means is that their days were good. The quality was good. That's called harichas yomim, which the Gemara in Masechtas Yuman Daf Ayin Alf says that there's a pasuk ki oirich yom, because length of days, ushno yischaim, and years of life, you see what they will be added to them. So the Gemara over there asks, what do you mean? Are there years of life and there are years that don't have life? That, the Gemara over there says from Rabbi Laza that these are the years of a person that get switched over from bad to good. And that is, we're not talking about extending the quantity of life. Rather, the quality, that's called Arichis Yom. Arichis Shanim are the actual years of the quantity. And therefore, yes, they had Arichis Yom and they had good life, but it didn't last longer than it was supposed to be because of the punishment that they didn't mourn properly over Yeshua. But then the Gemara asked, does harichu yamim mean only the days, meaning the quality and not the years, not the quantity? Elamiata, but when it says in the pasuk, in what we say in B'hayim Shemoyah, Laman yibu yumechem v'yumei v'nechem, that if you keep all the Torah of Hashem, so that your days should be prolonged, and the days of your children, yamim b'leishan, are you telling me that when it says yibu yumechem, that's only the days and not the years, that it's only talking about quality, not quantity, not that you live longer? And the Gemara says, no, bracha shani, blessings are different. A blessing of Yibu Yemechem will include even Arichas Shanim, not just Arichas Yom. However, there, when it was talking about a statement of Arichas Yom, that was talking about only quantity, only quality, not quantity. So the Gemara concludes this discussion about death with another statement. If one of the brothers dies, we continue on to the top of Kavav Maral, Yidagu kol achan kun, all the brothers should be worried. And that is, they should be afraid from death too. Similarly, echad mnei chabura shemes, if one of the members of a group dies, tidak kal chabur kulan, then the whole entire group has to worry. And the Gemara explains two different versions. Amri la demes god. Some say that this is in reference, if the older one of the group or of the brothers dies, then you have to be worried, because since it started from the oldest one, that's the midas hadin that's taking control from the oldest. Amri la demes god. And some say that it's in reference if the youngest one dies. And that is because regarding curses, the Gemara says that's maschilim nakatan. It says that the Gemara Brachas of Samachal says that curses start from the smallest, like it's by Adam Arishan, they started from the snake, then to Chava, then to Adam. So therefore, some say that this, that all the brothers have to worry. Some say it's when it starts from the oldest one, and that is it's going to the Rosh Habayis, so everyone has to be afraid. And some say it's referring when the youngest one starts, because the curse is starting, starts from the youngest, and it goes away, works its way up to the top, and that's when the brothers have to be worried.